to remind us. I bow to you, I bow to you, which is also a reflection of the Buddha in me.
Usually we've been beginning with a bow, but I thought this morning we could begin with talking about the bow a little bit before we do some bows. Partly this is because one of the questions posted was, what's up with the bows? Why are there so many bowing? What is this bowing about? Could we talk about bowing? And that's a very good idea, to talk about the meaning of the bows. To think about together what is bowing. Bowing is one of the forms that we are practicing here. And really the question about the bows is a question about many of these forms. Forms. I mean, chanting is a form. To chant Namo Amida Butsu or Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is a form. You're chanting a particular thing. And practicing metta, as we did on the first day, is a form. When you're practicing metta, you're doing a particular thing. So the form has a sense of you're doing this and not doing something else. So sitting meditation is a form. Walking meditation is a form. Prostrations are a form. So there are all these forms that are handed down, and the purpose of these forms is to help us in waking up. These are forms that are that women and men have tested and tried and done and have found helpful and then have passed on, like a something handed on in the family. But these forms can also be ways of being, they can be further ways of sleeping, of sleepwalking. It's possible to do these forms and do them in an automatic way or on automatic pilot. We do them, they become another habit like anything else, just a habit. So what makes the difference between whether the form is a way of waking up or the form is something that puts us to sleep even more? Only now we have a Buddhist sleep compared to other kinds of sleep. We have Buddhist sleepwalking. So what makes the difference between that? We make the difference. It's up to us whether the form in that sense doesn't have any magic in it. The form is not something that just automatically, if we prostrate or if we do this, that will wake us up. It, you could say our own heart is what makes the difference. Our heart is what makes the form a living form. It's what makes the form something that wakes us up. So when we think about the meaning of the bowing, when we reflect on that, consider the feeling of the bow, how does it feel to bow? That's part of awakening the bow, of not just having the bow be mechanical or automatic or routine. And it's a challenge when we do something again and again to have it be living, to have it be fresh, to have it be heartfelt and really meant. But one way that we do that is before just doing it, is to talk about doing it, right? There is a point at which we just do it. We don't just endlessly talk about it. But before just doing it, it's helpful to talk some about it. So that's why the question that the person wrote down of sort of what, could we talk about the bows? Could we talk about what bowing is? What is bowing as a practice? What's the meaning of bowing? So let's end the silence for now. If anybody would like to say anything about bowing, Could you say something about bowing? You've been bowing before. What is bowing to you? What is it? What is it meant? What is it felt like? What do you think bowing means? Mm-hmm. Can everyone hear?
I've been thinking that as I see us bow to each other, that it's one of the sweetest things that I've seen. And for me, it is honoring each other, honoring God.
So the first comment was about the sense of bowing to something larger. That it's a humble gesture. And the second comment was the sense of respect and honoring each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That it's a sweet, the bow can be sweet in that way, expression of some human sweetness.
Yes, for me also, it's a way of being humble and acknowledging the spirit, the connection, the oneness in the other being.
For me, it feels like coming home, kind of pavilion. I mentioned earlier that I grew up missing, and for me, in the chronic tradition, when you take prayer, you have what you call a series of rakaa. So for me, it's just like doing a rakaa, but just do it that. I don't know how to make it more people that right now. But it just feels good. It's like when I got most of them doing my prayers and everything, it's like walking into your grandmother's house. And when I'm doing a bow here, it's like walking into my grandmother's room. And it's all cozy and cool. You have to very root of everything.
One other thing about bowing for me is that it slows me down. And that's a very good thing.
Like Paul was saying, Yeah, it sort of interrupts the.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of bringing my head closer to my heart. So it's that kind of bringing those two together and acknowledging. I remember when I first heard about Namaste and the prayer that went with it. And I honor the place of the new, of peace, of love, of joy. I honor that place of you when you are in yours and I am in mine. We are the one.
Additionally, along with everything that everybody said, it brings up compassion. And it's a place that I want to sit in when I come. Well, I want to sit in that place all the time. But it also signals big, big compassion. And so it really feels wonderful to me because it shifts my whole attitude. If I'm somewhere else, and as soon as I do that, it just shifts into a deep compassion for humanity, for myself.
And one other thing, because the bowing is a bodily, physical act,
yeah.
It reminds me that spirit is kind of body. So there's something about connecting spirit and body, mm-hmm. physical act.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I might bow to almost anything because I bow in amazement and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So I will bow to trees and deer and cats and I mean I could just spend my life bowing really. And I also like it that when we bow we're always toward the earth. We're always, you know, acknowledging that, you know, it's all coming from there. So it's just an affirmation of the joy that God is and we can be here in this miracle.
It certainly has changed for me over time. And in my particular tradition, we definitely bow for and to everything. And soon I found myself, it was an act of bringing together. And soon I found myself bowing to people on New York City subways. You know, which was really the practice taking over me. And now I find that every time I bow, there's a moment of, in the bow, I'm pulling whomever or whatever it is I'm bowing to, towards me. And then at the peak of it, there's just a disappearance of all of it. And I find great joy in that. Just, I forget. In that little nanosecond, I forget me and it and everything. It's good.
Bowing to each other reminds me of the 60s and the 70s when black people would raise their fists to one another and acknowledge each other. It's in many ways, that was a real beautiful time. I'm really sorry that doesn't exist anymore. It really pains me sometimes that I can meet another black person, or another person in general. And when I smile, they don't return the smile. And I think that says something about where our world is headed, unfortunately. And so, for me, bowing to each other is really a tremendously beautiful expression of oneness with the other.
I'm still kind of taking back on what he was saying.
The bowing reminds me of when I nod, when I'm from your community. And when you walk down the street and you see a brother or sister, and some do and some don't, and you nod at each other, you know, you nod. And I like that. And that's the connection to bowing.
I think for me it's the intention of the bow. Like the way we bow here and the way people are talking about is very beautiful and powerful. But I think if there's anything in there that is about someone being higher than yourself and you being lower than someone, then I think that it loses some of the beauty and grace of it.
As everyone was sharing, I realized that I bow because I want people to know that I love them. And I want people to know that they are loved beyond words.
So let me read a little bit. Go ahead.
In addition to all of them, I bow in gratitude to the teaching of the Sangha, my ancestors, the Shrapa, and all of them.
So let me read a little bit from someone who's done some bowing. Suzuki Roshi, yesterday, Sister Ilda read from Roshi. So Roshi has a chapter on bowing, and he says some of the same things that we've been saying. So that's a good sign. Usually to bow means to pay our respects to something which is more worthy of respect than ourselves. But when you bow to Buddha, you should have no idea of Buddha. You just become one with Buddha. You are already Buddha. When you become one with Buddha, one with everything that exists, you find the true meaning of being. When you forget all your dualistic ideas, everything becomes your teacher, and everything can be the object of worship. When everything exists within your big mind, all dualistic relationships drop away. There is no distinction between heaven and earth, man and woman, teacher and disciple. Sometimes a man bows to a woman. Sometimes a woman bows to a man. Sometimes the disciple bows to the master. Sometimes the master bows to the disciple. A master who cannot bow to his disciple cannot bow to Buddha. Sometimes the master and disciple bow together to Buddha. Sometimes we may bow to cats and dogs. In your practice, you should accept everything as it is, giving to each thing the same respect given to Buddha. Here there is Buddhahood. Then Buddha bows to Buddha, and you bow to yourself. This is the true bow. When you adjust yourself, you bow to yourself in its true sense, and you are one with everything. Only when you are you yourself, can you bow to everything in its true sense. Bowing is a very serious practice. You should be prepared to bow even in your last moment. When you cannot do anything except bow, you should do it. This kind of conviction is necessary. So, let's practice do some bowing. As was mentioned, bowing is a bodily practice. It's something we physically do. It involves an intention, and it expresses a feeling, and the body is the way that we do that. So bowing actually begins with coming into the body, bringing the attention into the body. For many of us, just even doing that has a bouncing quality, just like bouncing a ball, that we touch the body, we feel the body, but then our thought may be onto something else. Our thought goes to something else, this morning or yesterday or what's coming next week. So the bouncing then is to bring the attention back to the body, very, very gently. Just return the attention to being in the body, feeling the body. The head, the neck, the arms, the shoulders, the torso, legs, feet, hands. Feel the body. Be in the body. So bowing is a mindfulness of body practice. Particularly feel the back of the body. There's so much attention on the front and the face and looking out, but feel the back of the body and that there's space behind the body. So when we bow, we're going to bow with our whole being. And then come back up and stay with it. Stay with it. Return to the body. Keep it, yes. So there's the physical part, the mindfulness of body with the bowing, and as many of you mentioned, there's a heart quality, there's the emotional quality of the feeling of respect or honor, sympathy, feeling for another person. So the wisdom of the heart, the bowing is a practice of the heart. So we bow as though we mean it. And the last part of the bowing is that we let go. At the end of the bow, when we come up, we let go of any ideas of that and this and me and her and him and whatever. Just let go of the bow. So the other thing I thought we could talk about besides bowing was meditating, since I think that's one of the things that most of us here share some interest in and connection to is meditation practice. Whatever the different kinds of meditation practice, I think that's probably the heart of things, meditating. So there's something called, yes. Yes. I think there are many forms of bows, and the one that we did is fine. There's also a higher, holding the hands higher, the position, and things like that. And then what you're mentioning with the top of the head and the forehead and the throat and the heart comes from the Tibetan tradition, I think, of a full prostration. So when you see people doing that, they're doing a form of that.
Can I ask? This three is the body, the speech, and the mind. That you practice the Buddha Dharma with your body and through your speech and in your mind. And also Buddha Dharma Sangha. And then as you do the prostration out, then you submit to the mind. When you, body, speech, mind, then you kneel on the ground and you do your prostration to those three things, and you come back up. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, you do another prostration. So, Nundra, in Tibetan tradition, which is the beginning preliminary practice for most Tibetan traditions, at least 100,000 prostrations before considered ready to begin to study the Buddha Dharma. Some students do that, then they have trouble in their practice, the teacher will say, do Nundra again. So, in some aspects of the tradition, the bow is the foundation.
So there's a lot to bowing, yes.
I'll add one thing also. Even in the Theravada tradition, there is also the three points of bowing. When you're bowing to a master, for example, every year, Ajahn Jinmin comes to Spirit Rock for an extended stay with his monks, and he is the Ajahn of the Tiger Caves Monastery in Thailand. And when he comes, most of us will do the same three points with a partial prostration before him, and we'll do it three times. So that's also common even in Theravada.
So from bowing to mindfulness meditation, how many people here have practiced mindfulness meditation? Would you raise your hand if you've done? Okay, so you've done mindfulness. So would you say something then about what mindfulness is? Same as what we did with the bowing, that we just first talk about. What is mindfulness? Would you mind if you've... Mindfulness?
Being mindful is being aware, being in the present moment.
So being mindful is being aware, being in the present moment.
I see it as planting an affirmation with the expectation that there's going to be a harvest.
Mm-hmm. What would the harvest be?
The harvest would be the well-wishing, the harvest would be the peace, the harvest would be the healing.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of training to be able to then radiate love and kindness.
I see the exquisite attention.
Attention.
Exquisite attention.
Exquisite attention. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness.
I explained to it as a willingness to be with whatever it is at the moment.
Yes. So mindfulness doesn't just have a beginning, but it has a middle, which is that it's, as you just said, it's Tracy, is that right? Stacy. The willingness to be with whatever is. So to be mindful of that, the willingness to be with whatever is coming up, whatever one is feeling, a sensation, a thought, the color of the trees, sound, taste. So mindfulness has something to do with staying with that, attention to that. So, what is... Where is the mindfulness now? What is mindfulness? So, the mindfulness is the mindfulness of that sound. That sound, we also have thoughts about that sound. When is it going to end? Is he going to hit it again? I like that sound, or I don't like that sound, or I'm tired of bells, or I like bells. Is that the comment? Yeah. I miss the bells. So mindfulness is that kind of, the mindfulness is the, right? That's the mindfulness. I don't know if that's exquisite or ordinary. And in addition to the attention, what I believe is called bare attention to that, there are the non-bare, like bare hand as opposed to the hand with gloves on, leather gloves or plastic gloves or thick wool gloves. The non-bare attention is the attention that is mixed with and has a lot of ideas about things, concepts, many thoughts. So the mindfulness practice then that we're doing is just a matter of placing the attention on something again and again, like the breathing or the body, being in the body, and then noticing when the attention is on something else, right? As we all have experienced sitting here, I'm sure. There are moments when the mind is with the body, with the breathing, and there are moments when the mind is with next week. And what's it going to be like when I go home? So this is then the process of the mind being with something, very, very close attention. Loving attention in a certain way. Just appreciative attention. And then the mind being away from that and going back and forth. So, meditation practice then is the development of this mindfulness, this ability to stay with something, be present with something, to be present with whatever. It's also the development of this ability to know, because sometimes I'm sitting here and it's a long, long time before I realize that haven't been in this room for the last 15 minutes, right? That I've been completely back in East Texas going over all sorts of things, right? And then, oh, here I am. This is here. So that awareness of the difference between memory and thoughts and this and what is actually happening now, that also is something that's developed, that meditation practice is cultivating that ability. So the third thing that's really important that meditation practice is cultivating is what's called maitri, or making friends with oneself. Because as I'm sitting here and I notice that my mind is going here and there and then landing like a bird and then taking off and here and there and whatever, if I try to just lock down and force my mind to be here. Damn it. You know? I'm gonna be here. I'm gonna have attention. Then eventually that kind of rebounds, right? Because of course the mind rebels because there's an aggression and there's a force. We're sort of making the mind be a certain way. So like any of us, I don't want to do that. Right? Get rid of that. I'm sick of that. I'm tired of that. I don't want to do that. So then the mind is even wilder than it was when we first sat down. So this making friends with ourselves is including, almost like just a really big hug or embrace. It's including the whole process of what happens with us as we sit here. Being present, not being present, being distracted, having memories of love affairs, memories of things that went well, whatever it might be, and being present. We're just going to include the whole thing. We're going to include the whole thing as part of practice. We call this making friends with ourselves. And it's a deep friendship we're talking about. We all have friends that, what do we call them? The good weather friends? And then there are other friends that we have a wider friendship with. Right? Not just the good days, but the other days. Not just the pretty parts, but the ugly parts. That's the kind of friendship we're talking about, making friends in that way. So, mindfulness and then this making friends go together. I want to read you something, not from a Buddhist text, but from something called Beloved. And it's a sermon that Baby Suggs preaches at one point. So she's an unchurched preacher, it says, one who visited pulpits and opened her great heart to those who would use it. In winter and fall, she carried it to AMEs and Baptists, holinesses and sanctifieds, the Church of the Redeemer and the Redeemed. Uncalled, unrobed, unanointed, she let her great heart beat in their presence. In the silence that followed, Baby Suggs, holy, offered up to them her great big heart. Here, she said, in this here place, we flesh, flesh that weeps, laughs, flesh that dances on bare feet in grass. Love it hard. Yonder they do not love your flesh, they despise it. They don't love your eyes, they just as soon pick them out. No more do they love the skin on your back. They do not love your hands. Those they only use, tie, bind, chop off, and leave empty. Love your hands. Love them. Raise them up and kiss them. Touch others with them. Pat them together. Stroke them on your face, because they don't love that either. You got to love it. You. And no, they ain't in love with your mouth. Yonder, out there, they will see it broken and break it again. What you say out of it, they will not heed. What you scream from it, they do not hear. What you put into it to nourish your body, they will snatch away and give you leavings instead. No, they don't love your mouth. You got to love it. This is flesh I'm talking about here. Flesh that needs to be loved. Feet that need to rest and to dance, backs that need support, shoulders that need arms, strong arms, I'm telling you. And all my people out yonder, hear me, they do not love your neck, unnoosed and straight. So love your neck, put a hand on it, grace it, stroke it, and hold it up. And all your inside parts that they just as soon slop for hogs, you got to love them. The dark, dark liver. Love it. And the beat and beating heart. Love that too. More than eyes or feet, more than lungs that have yet to draw free air, more than your life-holding womb and your life-giving private parts. Hear me now. Love your heart, for this is the prize. Saying no more, she stood up then and danced with her twisted hip the rest of what her heart had to say, while the others opened their mouths and gave her the music, long notes held until the four-part harmony was perfect enough for that deeply loved flesh. So we could end with, before we take a break, just a little bit of loving kindness and compassion practice, which this, that love that Baby Sogs is talking about, radiates and spreads. And in our tradition, we do this by placing that intention on the breathing. So breathing out the sense that others may be well, be happy, and breathing in with the sense that may their suffering be removed, be relieved, be released. May they be liberated from suffering. So just 2 or 3 minutes placing this on the breathing of breathing out and breathing in. Breathing out, sense of goodness and health, inspiration, joy, and breathing in knots, tightness. Breathe out freedom from suffering and breathe in suffering.